Welcome to a podcast by the University of Warwick Career Centre. This is a recording of a presentation given by Jeremy Barrod of the Daiwa Foundation.
I'm Jeremy, I'm the Director of Programmes at the Daiwa Foundation and the scholarships under my remit. So this is just a little presentation about the Foundation and what the scholarship is all about. Who we are. We were established in 1988 with a generous donation from Daiwa Securities, hence the name of the foundation. We're very unusual in that normally when a Japanese company sets up a kind of charitable arm, it usually remains part of the company in some way. We're unusual in the fact that firstly we're independent, and also we're UK based. So our home in London is our headquarters. And unsurprisingly, in the Anglo-Japanese Foundation, our objective is to support closer links between the UK and Japan. And we have an office, a headquarters in London and an office in Tokyo. And we carry out our objectives in three ways: through scholarships, grants, events program, and today we're going to concentrate on scholarships. The program began in 1991. It's pretty much unique in the way it's structured, and it's up to 10 scholars each year. The program has three elements. It's 12 months learning Japanese in Tokyo, then a 1 month homestay, and then a 6 month work placement. Now the biggest chunk of it is the language learning. And the language learning takes up, has three strands to it. There's actual formal academic language study. We also complement that with communication classes. And then there's the preparation classes for the Japanese language proficiency test. Language study, the formal academic language study is at the Naganuma School, this beautiful building here, which is in Shibuya. You probably see lots of pictures of Tokyo of that massive pedestrian crossing, the kind of X shape. That's outside Shibuya Station. And Naganuma is about 10-15 minutes walk away from there. All the classes are in Japanese and Japanese only. To begin with, scholars spend the first term in their own class, and then after that term's finished, they're then streamed off into the other classes. The other classes are mixed with other students, and most of the students come from China or Korea. That's why all the classes are just in Japanese. The pace of learning is fast. We're looking for scholars to go from usually zero or very little Japanese to what's known as upper intermediate. And that is a steep climb. There's regular testing. There are daily tests, there are weekly tests, there are unit tests, and there are chapter tests. And you'll be delighted to know that the results get sent back to us in London, so we keep a close eye on how people are progressing. And they've probably spotted, aha, morning classes, I have the afternoon off. There's quite a lot of homework. Now, it's not going to mean that you'll be slaving over Japanese morning, noon, and night. There is going to be homework to get through during the afternoon, but there should be enough time for individual scholars to start pursuing their individual interests. The communication classes start after about 5 months, and they're weekly, they run parallel with the formal academic study, but they're different in the fact that they're looking towards the Japanese that you would normally use in, say, an office environment. If you're looking, your work placement to go in a particular direction, they can start to tailor classes using language you're probably likely to use in the work placement environment. And the final strand, the Japanese language proficiency test. And we expect scholars to reach level 2. And this will be after scholars have been in Japan for 16 months. And this is the level we're looking for. This is the official description of level 2. Grammar to a relatively high level, 1,000 kanji, those are the Chinese characters, 6,000 words, and able to sort of converse, read, write in a general nature, and that's usually attained after 600 hours of study. It's a tough target, but it is attainable. After 12 months of study in Japan, in Tokyo, then there's the homestay. It's a 1 month stay with a Japanese family. It's an opportunity to try something new, and we've sent scholars to virtually every part of Japan. It's also a way of using Japanese away from the classroom in a more domestic environment, and this is often where scholars find their Japanese really takes off. And it's a good kind of preparation for the language test, which is a few months afterwards. Some of the things that scholars have got up to, you're staying with families, you're getting involved in local activities, getting buried in hot sand, going diving with traditional, what's known as breath hold divers. They go for looking for pearls, but they don't use any breathing equipment, they just hold their breath and down they go. And the final 6 months in the program is the work placement. We're looking to have a placement which is relevant to a scholar's particular interests and goals in life. Now, we take people from any discipline apart from one, and that's Japanese studies. So we've had people who've done physics, history, engineering, fine arts, journalism, a huge range. And the placement is developed in very close consultation with each scholar. We start the discussions about what placement an individual scholar would like 12 months before it actually happens. It takes a long time to piece everything together, look for the appropriate organizations, and the way things work in Japan, there's a lot of personal contacts and introductions that need to be gone through. So when the work placement actually starts, there's a constructive project that the scholar can get their teeth into. And these are some of the places where we've had work placements at. Architectural practices, Japanese Cabinet Office, the Bar Association, Civil Liberties Union. We had one scholar who was acting with the organizing committee for the 2002 World Cup. Ministry of Justice, we had the first foreign intern in the Japanese Supreme Court. Paul Smith, NTT Docomo, which is one of the mobile phone companies, various universities, media organizations. We can usually get people where they want to go. And we've got a lot of experience of placing people in an organization which is right for them. And these are pictures of scholars on their work placement. Phoebe, an architect, she worked learning how to use carpentry, use traditional Japanese carpentry skills to build things. Japanese carpentry is completely different to sort of joinery in this country. Riza was working in a magazine company, working in a science lab, working in a medical hospital. Carl, who's an artist, was doing a portrait project with survivors of the bombing of Hiroshima. So a huge mixture of things in different parts of Japan. After the scholarship, scholars do lots of different things. Some Sometimes they're able to remain longer in Japan, sometimes they come back to the UK, and then they go and work for a huge selection of different organisations. They can be quite small, they can be large multinationals. And just to give an idea of some of what some scholars are doing now, James Harding, who's the editor of the Times, was one of the first scholars. Edmund Duval, who's one of this country's leading ceramic artists. Luke, who's now an architect and who is a tutor at the UCL Bartlett. Merrin, editor of Money Week. Hugo Dobson, who's now one of the leading Japan specialists now at Sheffield, and Carl, whose work we saw earlier. So it just gives an idea of sort of different things that scholars are up to. The application process. Deadline is 4th of December. You can get the application form directly from the Foundation's website. And along with the form, it needs to be accompanied by three confidential references, and for those at university, at least two of them should be from academics who know you and your work. The selection process after the application hits us. Stage one, we go through the applications and get a long list, and we'll invite people on the long list to a stage one interview in early February. Those who get through that stage, there is then a language aptitude test and a lunch. Now, the aptitude test and the lunch. The aptitude test is something which is relatively new. We have done it historically using a different format. We haven't used it for some years now, but we've decided to reintroduce it. The aptitude test, sorry, yes.
Sorry, that's roughly how many are cut down to stage one?
Stage one, we're probably getting down to about 30 people.
Like out of?
150.
Okay.
So we do cut it down quite drastically. And then to stage two, we're probably looking at about 20, 25 people. The aptitude test is to determine how able a candidate is to learn a language. It doesn't test how good you are at French or German or what have you. It just tests aptitude, so you can't actually prepare for the test. It's the same aptitude test that the Foreign and Commonwealth Office uses for its fast-trained candidates. It's not a computer, it's paper and multiple choice. And then after the aptitude test, there's a lunch where we bring all the candidates together with members of Foundation staff, with assessors, and just see how candidates interact with each other. Oh, I should have mentioned, with the stage one interview, that's conducted by our director general and two external assessors. So we've had stage one interview, we've had stage two, the aptitude test, and the lunch. We then cut down the number of candidates a little further, and we go to stage three, which is the final interview with the Board of Trustees. And the Board of Trustees, you'll be able to see from our website who they are, but they're a mixture of former diplomats, former government ministers, financiers, an interesting mixture. And I've never sat in to the trustees interview. All stages of the selection process take place at our headquarters in London. Candidates will be informed of the Foundation's decision by letter at the end of each stage. Yes?
How many go to stage three?
Varies year on year. I would say at most 15. And those who are selected for the scholarship will be informed within a week after the final interview. And then departure for Japan will be in September next year. On the program, the Foundation pays for all tuition costs, all examination fees. We provide scholars with a maintenance allowance, which is the equivalent of 3 million yen a year. It's, just to put that into context, on the JET program, it's 3.6 million yen. So it's fact that you're studying, that's quite a generous allowance. At the moment, 3 million N is about £19,000. But even when the pound was much stronger, it was worth about £15,000 a year. This means that scholars can live and have a very enjoyable time living in central Tokyo.
Is it all given at once? Or would you...
No, we pay it every 2 months. Scholars have their own bank accounts, which we help them set up, and then we pay it directly in there. Yes.
How high is the living standard?
It's pretty good. I mean, scholars decide where they like to live. Some people like to be right in the centre of things, but obviously where they live is going to be quite small. It's going to be the equivalent of a studio flat. If you want more room, you'll need to go further out. But we do get frequent emails from scholars saying, "Hi, how are you? Just off to the weekend to Kyoto," or something like that. So they speed off around the country because they do have, we do provide the resources to enable them to try different things, and also travel around Japan is so easy. So it's a good standard of living, yes.
Do people usually spend all of this money that they give them?
We don't usually ask them. We provide what we think is a pretty generous amount to enable them to fulfill the objectives of the scholarship and still have an enjoyable time. With accommodation, once scholars arrive in Japan, we put them up in a hotel for 3 weeks. And during that time, they find flats to rent. Our colleagues in the Tokyo office, who are the kind of liaison point for scholars while they're in Japan, they help them find a flat. And so it's a private rented accommodation. Scholars often congregate around certain areas because it's the ease of getting to the language school, but it's pretty much up to the individual scholar. And we provide standard medical insurance while scholars are in Japan on the program. So pretty much covered. And just on a final note, we recently selected our 100th scholar, because we don't choose that many a year. It's taken us a little while to get to 100. But we celebrated that last May with a reception at the British Ambassador's residence. That's the foundation. That's the scholarship. Do you have any questions? Yes. Yes.
So what exactly are you looking for? Like, do you need to be on the first? I know it's kind of on the website about it,
it's
like 24 kind of
criteria.
Yeah.
A first is nice, but it's not. We're looking for a good degree, so it's a minimum, usually of 2-1. Okay. But we are looking at the whole person.
Yeah.
We are looking not only at academic achievement, but we're also looking at outside interests, career objectives. A spark, a genuine interest in Japan. It's a whole combination of things, because we're looking for people who have the potential to be leaders in the future, but also people who can flourish under what is quite a demanding program.
Yes. You take account of knowledge of other languages.
Yes.
So the more languages you know, the better.
It helps. I mean, if we see, if you can demonstrate that you've learned a language successfully in the past,
yeah,
that is a plus. I mean, Japanese is very, very different to a Western language.
Yeah.
But if you're used to coping with the grammars and structures of another language, that's always a plus. Yes?
Do you still have to be a student when applying? Like, say, if you were to graduate this year and then do a gap year, could you apply after a gap year?
We'd like to know what you've been up to and how that fits into your future career. But yes, we've had people who've graduated, worked for a bit, and then come onto the program.
Yes, what happens if you're a postgraduate master? Because your academic year finishes in September,
mm-hmm.
You know, to have time to write up your thesis and stuff like that. So, roughly what time in September would you be sending people out?
No, it's going to be a bit different from next September, because the language school is changing its terms a little bit. It's going to start a little later than it has done. Mm-hmm. So we're looking to send people out probably the third week in September.
Right.
We've had a number of master students go on to the program, mm-hmm. and usually the tutors, if they're aware that someone's going on to the program, they can usually be a bit more flexible. We've had people who've had their PhD Viva about 2 weeks before going out. So, a bit tough, but people, I think they sort of brought things forward quite a bit.
Okay.
Yes. If you had a gap year, who would you get to do references for you?
I think if you've done just a gap year, then we'd still be looking for two academic references, mm-hmm. and maybe a reference from the person who was in charge of you,
okay.
if you're doing a kind of a gap year through an organisation.
Yeah.
The thing with the references, they have to be people who really do know you and how you work.
Mm.
Because we do read those very, very carefully.
Mm.
And the fuller the reference, the better.
What kind of references are you looking for? Tutors,
yes.
Friends?
Not friends.
Not even one friend.
It's if that friend can talk about your background, skills, experience as a work or study environment,
mm-hmm.
possibly. But we do look for not so sort of close relationships where the referee is involved.
Mm-hmm.
If we've had references in the past from some managers of a bar where a candidate has worked, and that really doesn't tell us anything. We need to see a reference which can sort of tell us how good a candidate is academically, or what they've achieved in a work environment, and how that means they will be able to flourish on a program like this. It's probably also worth mentioning about the statement on the application form. It's only about a page, but it's worth spending a long time working on it, because you can probably imagine we do hear the same things over and over again. The statement really is, how does the program slot into your career objectives and what you could give back to the UK-Japan relationship, and it is worth spending a lot of time over. And I would strongly suggest that if you have people who could read it for you, if you could go to the career service and ask them to look over it for you, or if you're a tutor who's amenable in reading it and offering suggestions, take every opportunity, because it's a very, very important part of the application form. Anything else? Yes?
Yeah. How many students at Warwick have you had over the past 20 years?
Oh, Warwick students. Actually, the current president of the Alumni Association is a Warwick graduate. Let's see, 1, 2, 3. Oh, it's 4. One of the new ones who went out last month is a Warwick person. Any other questions? Okay. But if you'd like to sort of ask any more questions one-on-one, that'd be great. Otherwise, thank you very much for coming along.
For more information, please go to www.dajf.org.uk, or you can email scholarships@dajf.org.uk.